This is February 25th. Today is exactly 1 year since I'm a soldier, and exactly 1 year and 1 day since the Russian aggression, previously localized in the Donbas and in the Crimea, spilled into a big European war. A year in the army, my colleagues sadly joke, the first year in the army, because we all perfectly understand that the war can last a very, very long time, which means that there are chances to meet the second and even third years in the army. The enemy does not take into account his own losses. His mobilization reserve amounts to tens of millions. Of course, these millions include old people, sick people, and teenagers. It does not matter for Moscow. In that mid-shaft war waged by Russia, there will be a place for all of them, albeit not for long. All of them, Putin and his generals, will not hesitate to send to death just to sit in their chairs a little longer. Recently, in a book by the British historian Peter Hopkirk, I came across an explanation of Russian tyranny and this Russian submissiveness, the readiness to go to certain death without resistance if authorities order so. Hopkirk wrote that all this is the legacy of the Mongol yoke. He was sure that the Mongol Khans deliberately arranged a negative selection in the territories of present-day Russia they conquered, promoting only the most bloodthirsty and unscrupulous representatives of the conquered peoples to high positions. This bloodthirsty and unscrupulous, in turn, with a sword, fire, and gallows, prevented any unauthorized activity of their own tribesmen. For centuries, eradicated initiative, an idea of the value of freedom from Russians, and in return, implanting unconditional submission to any, even the most schizophrenic authorities. The book was written at the height of perestroika, in the era of social and political transformation of the 80s of the last century, which eventually led to the collapse of the USSR. Hopkirk had clearly inflated expectations from perestroika. In his book, he wrote that at the end of the 20th century, the Russians were finally able to get rid of the heavy medieval legacy and were about to start building a normal, non-cannibalistic state system. As we can see, even now in Russia, there are hundreds of thousands, and in the future there will be millions of people who, on the orders of their superiors, are ready to kill and die literally for nothing, so that the goblin from the Kremlin, stupefied by power, amuses his pride and looks in his own eyes to be a great commander. The only thing in Russia more numerous than obedient fools is artillery shells. I recently tried to calculate how many of these shells per hour fall on just one small section on the front in Bakhmut, but it turned out to be impossible. They fall and fall, they simply have no number. Here, listen, I recorded for you the usual street noise of Bakhmut. I also recorded the explosion of a mortar shell that was aimed at me and my comrades. I recorded it, of course, by accident. My recorder was turned on at the moment when Russians opened fire on us. The shell fell not far from us, literally a couple of tens of yards. If we were on the open area, most likely you would not have heard this episode of the podcast. Fragments of a mortar shell easily pierce bulletproof vests even at distance of 100 and even 150 yards. We were saved by urban development. The scattered fragments were stopped by the walls of buildings. We were several hundred meters away from Russians, hidden from their eyes by urban development, but they still saw us. And all because this war, in which I am today for exactly a year, differs from all the others in the massive use of drones, from huge armed with bombs and rockets to small, almost toy-like ones, with the help of which soldiers from both sides correct artillery fire. But more on that next time.